Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I have learned about life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. Now, if you consider yourself to be an eternal being having a life experience, did you ever wonder about your past history and who you really are? What is the nature of your soul? What stage of development is it in? What are you trying to accomplish in this life? Our guest today offers possible insights into some of this information. Our show today is titled The Michael System Part 2, as our guest is Shepard Hoodwin, who was a guest on our show last January 27th. Shepard is a channel who specializes in the Michael teachings and has been channeling the Michael Soul Group since 1986. He also does intuitive readings, past life regressions, healing, counseling, and teaching others to channel. He has conducted workshops on the Michael teachings throughout the United States and is the author of several books on the Michael teachings and spirituality, to include Journey of Your Soul. Shepard Hoodwin, welcome to the show, Shepard.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. Hey, for our listeners that might not have caught the first show, I'd like to start out with a little bit of review. So why don't you just explain quickly, what is the Michael System?
Michael is the name of a group of souls on what we call the causal plane, who have brought forth a system of understanding through a number of channels over decades that explains how we as eternal souls set up our lifetimes. There are various categories that have come through, and in this way, it might remind you of astrology. It's not astrology, but as with astrology, there are a number of different categories. I channel charts that profile people as a soul. The top half of the chart is the essence part, which is the part that we take with us from lifetime to lifetime while on Earth. And that includes categories such as your role, which is the type of soul you are. There are seven types: server and priest, artisan and sage, warrior and king, and scholar. It also includes your location within consecutively larger groupings of souls, including your entity, which is your spiritual family. It includes your ratio of male to female energy, which is the same over every lifetime. Your frequency as a soul, the speed of vibration of your soul on a scale of 1 to 100. And the number of previous grand cycles you've had, meaning how many other planets you've played this game on before coming to Earth to be a human. And the bottom half of the chart is your overleaves, which are personality traits that overlay or lay on top of your soul and are in this particular configuration for this lifetime only. And as with the seven roles, there are seven goals, which is what motivates you through the life, seven attitudes, which is how you look at the world, seven modes, which is your way of running your energy, for example, aggressively or cautiously or passionately. Your center, whether you react from, say, your emotions, your intellect, or your body first. Your obstacle, which could be arrogance or impatience or stubbornness. Your body type, which has a surprising amount to do with how you experience your life. And also your soul age, which increases from lifetime to lifetime.
Okay. Now, this information is coming from the Akashic Records. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you do it through channeling. Why don't you explain just quickly, what is channeling?
Channeling is simply a means of communicating with a non-human intelligence. For example, channeling might include talking to your dead relatives, but we usually call that mediumship. When you're connecting at a higher level with an eternal teacher such as Michael, we call that channeling. You can channel words, ideas, as I do. You can channel healing energy. You can channel movement, art, etc. It's simply a way of bringing through something that isn't ordinarily available to us.
Could you channel an animal outside of a human?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it channeling, because with channeling, you're actually allowing another intelligent being to speak or work through your body. But you can communicate with animals. You can communicate with absolutely any intelligence in the universe once you start to open up that faculty. So one could, for example, tune into a rock formation and get a sense of the emotions that are held there, what it has witnessed over the eons, what its feelings are about interacting with you in that moment. You can communicate with the weather to see what the emotional content is. You can communicate with any animal and get a sense, maybe a very simple sense, but a sense of what that animal is thinking and feeling in that moment.
Okay, that's kind of amazing. Let's go back and kind of pick up where we started, or where we left off. And one of the things we didn't really get around to in the last show was soul ages. So why don't we spend a little bit of time now? There are, I guess, five different soul ages that we might be. Although I understand that there's a two more, transcendental and infinite, which, you know, maybe we can talk about too. But why don't you explain what the soul ages are and what the focus and the issue and the perception is and how they vary on soul ages?
We each have many layers to us. Obviously, we have a physical age, and that's the age of our body, how long we have been in this body on Earth. And the age of our body dictates, to a certain extent, what our perspective is going to be. So when you're 13 years old, for example, you're starting to have certain hormonal changes. And every 13-year-old, whether early or late in that experience, will be having some commonalities with other 13-year-olds, although obviously they're each individual and have a lot of differences as well. So we would say that when you're 13, there are certain stages of development that you're going through no matter what else is different about you. And when you're 40 and you're in the midlife, there are certain things that are going to come up for you because you are 40, no matter how old a soul or eternal a spark you are underneath that. And when you're 75, there are certain things you share in common with every 75-year-old. Well, your soul also has an age. And that also, very similarly to what I just described, has certain commonalities. When you are brand new to a planet, let's say in your first lifetime, in the Michael teachings, we would say that you are a first-level infant soul. And that means that even though maybe you've done a lot of other planets before being a human on Earth and you're very experienced, as a human being, you're like a newborn infant. You know nothing about this planet. You haven't experienced anything here. It's all new. And so it's going to be set up so that it's fairly simple for you, just as you're not going to expect a newborn infant to pass college entry exams. It's just not going to be on the curriculum for a newborn infant. The infant is simply going to be relaxing, getting used to being on the planet, being taken care of, learning how to survive. We don't have any more first-level infant human beings on Earth because we are a maturing species. I think the earliest we have is third-level infant. Every lifetime contributes to your progression through the soul age, but it might take 5 lifetimes to complete first-level infant, because there are certain stages you have to complete. And if, for example, you die young, then you haven't completed the 7 stages that are going to allow you to get to second-level infant.
Is it one stage per life, or are there multiple lives per stage?
Generally, there's more than one to get through it. Theoretically, you could do all 35 physical plane soul age levels in 35 lifetimes, but no one ever does that. It always takes, at least with some of them, more than a lifetime. And you may spend, say, 10 lifetimes at 6th level mature, which is another soul age. So it just depends on you, and it depends on how much you get done. But the good news is that there's no hurry. You can go as slowly or as quickly as you want to, and it's strictly a matter of personal preference.
Okay.
So you, as you're learning to survive, you're acclimatizing to the planet, and you move through first infant to second, third, fourth, sixth, seventh infant. At 7th, you're at the culmination. You're reviewing all that you've learned about surviving, and you're preparing for the next soul age, which is the baby soul cycle, rather comparable to when you're a toddler. When you're a toddler, your parents are going to probably give you some simple choices, but not a lot of choices. So if you have a 3-year-old, you might say, do you want vanilla ice cream or chocolate ice cream? Because if you offer that 3-year-old 31 flavors, they'll never be able to make up their mind. They aren't sophisticated enough yet to zero in on the choices. So they're learning choice, but it's kept simple. Baby souls are often found in fundamentalist religions that are fairly rigid and simple, so that the choices people have to make are kept simple for them. And so a lot of fundamentalists, whether you're talking about fundamentalist Islam or fundamentalist Christianity, are made up, not entirely, but with a lot of baby souls. And so if you, David, as an old soul, are talking to a baby soul fundamentalist Christian, they're not going to be able to have as expansive a perspective as you have, because you've gone through a lot more stages. Just as you, as an adult human, have a more expanded perspective than if you're talking to a 3-year-old. In no way is this meant to be derogatory of the baby soul. It's just that they are in a different stage of their development. You don't talk down to them, but you just understand that certain things that come easily to you are not yet a part of their development.
Okay. Now, young, you say most people on the planet are in the young stage, some aspect of it, some level of young. Talk about that.
Well, it is the average soul age of the planet, which is late level young. But only about a third of human beings are actually young souls. So you have a bell curve that peaks at late level young, but you have infant, baby, mature, and old souls as well. So what happens is you start out in this very innocent state as an infant soul, where you might be living in the jungles of Africa or South America, or the urban jungles of a city slum, just learning how to survive. And as you gain experience, then you move into the baby soul, where you're becoming more individuated, and you are learning how to work within a simple societal structure, whether it's your religion, your political structure, following the rules, just like a 3 or 4 year old is going to have to learn some basic manners and what, you know, we don't hit and we share our toys, etc. So throughout this, you're becoming more specific as an individual, but as a baby soul, your individuality is going to reflect the organizations that you're a part of. And once you feel confident in that, you move into the young soul cycle where you want to take that individuation to its climax. You want to become as independent and as self-directed as possible. You challenge yourself to impact the outer world as effectively as you possibly can. So this is the cycle where the soul is most interested in achieving outer success. You will find that the captains of industry, the people that are the CEOs of corporations, a lot of political leaders are young souls, or even the pastor of your church, who is a young priest who was ambitious because it suited his lessons to learn how to rise to the top. So a lot of the people in charge of the world are young souls because they're willing to be uncomfortable, to work hard, to climb to the top, unlike the other soul ages to a certain extent. So once you feel that you have mastered the outer world, then you're ready to delve into your inner world. So this is parallel to what happens when adolescence hits. When you're a youngster and you're happily achieving in the outer world, you're going to your soccer practice and you're playing with your friends and you're not really thinking about yourself much. But when adolescence hits, which is parallel to the mature soul cycle, suddenly you're very interested in your relationships and your feelings, and the hormones are pumping, and it's disorienting. But now is the time to develop your inner world. You want to go as deep as possible. So the mature cycle is the deep delve into self. It is the time of the greatest artistic mastery. It is the time where life can be a soap opera because relationships are the central thing to you. It's a time where you want to create community, not based like in the baby soul cycle on the outer structures, the rules, but based on consensus, based on me expressing myself, you expressing yourself, and let's see if we can mesh those together. And right now, the whole planet is moving towards being predominantly mature soul, and that's going to change the nature of what it is to be a human being on Earth dramatically, because suddenly we're going to be a lot more interested in the arts and taking care of one another, in political consensus rather than the young soul top-down kind of hierarchy. So
if we're in, if the world is in late young, what are we talking about? A few hundred years before that that really starts to take hold, when the world turns into early mature? Is that maybe what we're talking about, or is that hard to perceive?
They say that coming events cast their shadows, and we are already beginning to have a lot more mature soul consciousness on Earth. I think the Oprah Winfrey show was a great example of that evolution, where early in the show she was more sensationalistic and more just about getting the ratings. And she herself had an awakening where she felt like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want my shows to be meaningful to people. I want them to explore their emotions, to find healing. And so I think her show, over 25 years, reflects what we're coming to as a society, where there's far more content on the bookshelves about the inner world, about healing, about understanding relationships, gaining skills. And there are a lot of mature souls. And because that is a more advanced stage than the young soul stage, they're beginning to have more or disproportionate influence. But when the actual average human being on Earth is mature, We're really close to that, but it might be 100, 200 years before it actually locks in at that level.
Okay. Now, how about old? You say there's some old on here. I guess that's the other side of the bell curve. And you talk about a focus being context and the issue being. What's that all about?
Well, once you've completed the mature soul cycle, you've gone really deep into self and you feel you have a good handle on relationships, then the next logical thing is to try to get an overview. So whereas the mature soul goes as deep as possible, the old soul goes as high as possible. Mature soul cycle is about you and me and exploring that very deeply. The old soul cycle is you and me and this context. So the old soul becomes more philosophical. The old soul wants to see, how do you and I relate to the whole world or to the whole cosmos? And I think you exemplify that, David, as a third level old soul. You are very interested in the individual's relationship to the cosmos, and this is what you teach on your show. But that is a typical old soul perspective. And old souls make up about 10-11% of the population of the earth. So increasingly, as you move into the old soul cycle, you become less attached to the physical plane. You become more laid back, more casual, more anything goes, more tolerant, at least if you're in the positive side of that energy. In the Michael teachings, everything is defined as having a positive pole, which is where that energy is manifesting in a love-based way, and a negative pole, where it's manifesting in a fear-based or destructive manner. So there is nothing on your Michael chart that is intrinsically good or intrinsically bad. It's all a matter of how skillfully you use it. But the old soul in the positive pole is generous, forgiving, easygoing, laid back, and philosophical about life. And there's less of the drama that you tend to find during the mature soul cycle.
What about transcendental? You have that on there, explain that. Why is that on your chart?
To explain that, I'll also explain about the seven planes of creation because it's relevant to this. The number seven comes up over and over in various spiritual teachings because, in part, our universe is based on the principle of seven. And there may be other universes based on principles of other numbers. But here we have seven. So there are actually seven soul ages, there are seven planes, there are seven soul types, there are seven goals, etc. The seven planes of creation can be broken down into the three higher planes, the three lower or more concrete planes, of which the physical plane is a part, and then the intermediary plane, which is the Akashic plane, which is in the middle. It's like the pivot point. And so the three lower or more concrete planes could be seen as a unit. And so the seven soul ages don't all happen on the physical plane. The first five happen on the physical plane. And then the sixth happens through the next plane, and the seventh happens through the next plane still, but not generally on the physical plane, except when you have a transcendental soul or an infinite soul. And this is a rare occurrence that happens when humanity needs a boost from the higher planes. The last transcendental soul that we know of on Earth was Gandhi. And that means that Gandhi's regular human soul stepped aside toward the end of his life and let a larger soul from a reuniting entity on a higher plane. An entity is your spiritual family. It's a group of souls. He stepped aside and allowed this larger soul to temporarily come through his body to shake things up to make humanity aware of social justice. It was to create social change. And then we know of four infinite souls, which come from still higher planes, from reuniting cadres. They come through the high planes, through the lower planes into the physical plane. And the four infinite souls were Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, and Krishna. So they brought radical spiritual change to the planet. And the way they did this was to bring through their bodies this very intense, faster vibrating, transformational energy, and they shook things up. Throughout most of his life, Jesus, for example, was a seventh level old king. He was a great teacher, but he was an ordinary human until the end of his life, where he opened wider and this large, much larger energy came through to imprint humanity. And the intention of that was not to create Christianity. It was to get people to question their rigid spiritual beliefs and open up to something new. So those are the seven soul ages.
Okay. Now let's talk about cycles. You say people have had multiple cycles. What's a cycle? And what do we learn from a cycle? What do we take with us from cycle to cycle?
Each of us at the core of ourselves is an eternal being that in the Michael teachings is called a spark of the Tao. The Tao is spelled T-A-O. It's a Chinese word. It means the all that is, or the ground of being, the source. And Michael likes to use the word Tao rather than God because, at least in the Western world, we don't have a lot of baggage associated with that. And that is our core identity. That is what we really are, is that that being that is not expressed in the universe. Every time we decide to explore ourselves by expressing ourselves into the universe, we may undertake what in the Michael teachings is called a grand cycle. And that is where we pick a planet and a life form, and we pick a soul type that will get us into that life form, such as priest in your case, or sage in my case. And we start a series of lifetimes on the physical plane of that planet. The life form could be human, it could be on Earth, dolphins and whales. The cetaceans are also sentient, high-level life forms. On another planet, the life form could look like a giant bird, it could look like a blob of plasm, it could look like a cloud, it could look like any of the animals that we're familiar with. It could be inconceivable things. But in any case, if it's capable of purely intellectual function, it may be chosen by a spark of the Tao.
And it would have its same ages, right? You would have your, you know, the seven ages that we just went through in each cycle.
Exactly, yes. You're always on every planet, every life form, you're going to have the seven soul types, and you're going to start out as an infant soul, and you're going to go through the stages.
What do you take with you from cycle to cycle? I would think that if you went through an entire cycle, you would have a great deal of wisdom that you would take with you at the beginning of the second cycle.
Absolutely, that's very true. And you just keep adding layers and layers of experience to that. Our beings are incredibly vast. We are so much larger than most of us have any idea of. We are just huge, huge beings. The person that you experience as David Gagan, in this lifetime, is maybe 1/12,000th of your overall being. And so let's say you've undertaken your first grand cycle. You completed the physical plane of that planet. You then move through the astral plane, where instead of exploring physicality, you explore in depth more pure emotion. Then you move through the causal plane, which is, Michael is a causal plane group, entity. On the causal plane, you explore pure intellect. You pass through the Akashic plane to the three higher planes, which are then more exalted versions of energy, emotion, and intellect. And then you're back in the Tao. And then if you want to, you can do another cycle. And every time you do this huge loop, you gain layers. You gain greater capacity for complexity, subtlety, nuance. But your lessons will be very different from one planet to another because different life forms give you the capacity to explore different types of lessons. So, for example, the human life form is rather aggressive. The animal that we chose to take on as our sentient form is a rather aggressive animal. And so, you know, we're experiencing issues about power. We have wars. We have this huge capacity for destruction that can give us an opportunity to learn consciously to choose love, to choose peace, etc. The dolphins and whales do not have that capacity. They don't have hands. They can't create weapons. They are having a very different experience of their cycle. They're playful. They're meditative. And in some ways, they're more advanced than humans. But it's a different set of lessons. So when you undertake your second grand cycle, you will choose a lot of different variables that are going to teach you things that you didn't learn in the first. Because no one wants to be bored. No one wants to repeat what has gone before. So this just keeps going. On Earth, the average number of previous grand cycles is 4. But on another planet closer to the center of the universe, the average might be 20 or 100 or 1500. And those are the planets that have the extraterrestrials that have, you know, group mind and space travel and super advanced technology. But again, as with everything else, one is not better than another. We may be having some things that they don't have, whereas also obviously they have some things like technology that we don't have. But all of the experiences are valuable to the Tao. They all add the ability to know itself better. So what do we take with us from cycle to cycle? Science fiction writers are very often drawing on their deeply buried or just almost inaccessible memories of their previous grand cycles. Their imaginations allow them to access memories of different life forms and what it might have been like on different planets, of course, filtered through the consciousness of being a human. We can't, as humans, really quite understand what it's like to be something else, so everything gets filtered that way. But a lot of the pieces that come up in these science fiction soap operas are based on the memories of those writing the books. So everything is there. It may be hard to reach, but some people may be able to remember specifically their previous grand cycles if they're regressed. Let's say they're hypnotized deeply and they can get their barriers out of the way. They may be able to remember some of the stories, especially those that feel unresolved, that need a little bit more advancement or work. Those might be available to be reviewed so that we can understand why we're dealing with the issues that we're dealing with.
So you're saying that issues are not just in our past life as we go from infant to baby and such. They can be really in previous cycles.
They can be. One would hope that by the time you complete a grand cycle, you would be fairly complete with that experience. You would have tied up most of the loose ends, at least those that you were capable of tying up. If you really just couldn't get it all together, then you may set up the next grand cycle to help you further resolve the issue. So
can you end a cycle if you choose to before it finishes? Can you go back to the Tao?
You can, but that is very rare. There are souls who get themselves stuck. They just can't break out of their rut. And sometimes they will choose or they will find it necessary to abort their grand cycle. But again, this is very unusual. Usually you can work things out.
Okay. Now, in your chart, as you mentioned earlier, you have two different categories, and you have the essence and the overleaves, and the overleaves are kind of like personality. So, so an essence would be what your basic soul nature is, and then your personality would be the aspects of that you bring to this life so that you can work on whatever you want to work on, old karma or new experiences or whatever. And as part of your essence, you talk about roles, and you mentioned them earlier, the seven roles. Why don't you go through and talk a little bit about each one of these roles and what it means to be a server or a priest or whatever?
The seven roles or soul types are the most important part of the Michael teachings, and probably the most interesting in general. We know that we are eternal souls. The soul is what we carry from lifetime to lifetime, the part of us that processes all of our physical plane experiences. So we know most people believe that there is at least an aspect to us that is an eternal soul. But what most people don't realize is that the souls are not homogeneous. It's not like just one kind of soul. There are seven types, and they are literally built differently. They're designed differently to have different experiences. And so understanding our soul type is going to help us understand why we function the way that we function and why our friends and loved ones and enemies even function the way that they do. We each have an intrinsic different set of strengths and weaknesses based on our soul type. So, like many of the traits in the Michael chart, they sit on the chart in a particular position. There are four axes or basic qualities. There's the inspiration axis, which has to do with the inner world. And two of the soul types sit on the inspiration axis. They're an inspirational in nature, and these are server and priest. The first three axes are divided into ordinal and cardinal, and ordinal is the detail or the zoom lens, you might say, and cardinal is the big picture, the wide angle lens experience of, in this case, inspiration. So server souls, which are the most common souls on any planet, they account for 25% of all incarnational souls.
Server on our planet or everywhere?
On all planets in our universe.
Okay.
Yeah. I can go into that later. It's actually very interesting how the proportions have a reason to them. They're, the rarest soul type is king, and they're 1/28th of the population. Priests, the second rarest, are 2/28ths. Sages are 3/28ths. It's just so elegant. When you understand these numbers at all, it's just beautifully graceful. So anyway, servers are 7/28ths, which is 1/4 of the population. And servers and priests are all about inspiration. You're a priest soul. Servers and priests need to be inspired, and they need to inspire others, or they can't live. It is bread and butter to the priests and servers to inspire and be inspired. And so if you know that someone is a server or priest and they're not doing well, you're going to look at, Are they getting the inspiration they need? Now, priests, being cardinal, being big picture, like to inspire to their vision of the higher good. And that's exactly what you're doing on your show. You are bringing in guests and you're talking about the big picture of things, which is what priests excel at. Servers want to inspire to the common good. And they are the people that are inspiring others by nurturing them. They are healers, helpers. A lot of people in government are servers, bureaucrats, people who work at the post office, people that work in your, at the barbershop, people who run for Congress are often servers. They are interested in helping people in mundane ways, and they're not afraid to get their hands dirty in anything that might be of service to others. They are not as frequently famous as some of the other roles because that just doesn't interest them that much. But we do have famous servers. We have the Dalai Lama. We have Queen Elizabeth II. We have, in among actors, Sally Field is a good example of a server soul. So they're everywhere, but they are more common in the East. In India and China, you might have 40% of the population who are servers because those cultures value what they have to offer. Whereas in the United States, we have a lot of artisan and warriors incarnating here because they like what you can do in the United States. So it's all by choice. You can do whatever you want basically in the universe as long as you can make it happen. So these are the two inspiration roles, and they tend to be attracted to one another. So you find a lot of priests marrying servers and vice versa, although there's no rule about that. It's just a natural attraction. Then we have the two expression axis roles. I said that inspiration is about the inner world. Expression is about bringing what is in the inner world into the outer world through creativity and self-expression and communication. You have artisans, which are the second most common soul type, and these are people who express themselves in an ordinal or focused way through form. These are the people who give you a new haircut, who invent things, who design clothes, who fix the plumbing, who are the architects, the builders. Whereas sages, I'm a sage, so sages are in the big picture of self-expression, which is instead of making things, sages make ideas. Sages are about communication. They're about intellect, and particularly higher intellect, conceptual understanding, insight. A lot of actors, singers, writers are sages. Whereas a lot of artisans are technically, literally artisan souls, people who are really good at working with their hands. Then we have two roles that are about action. Action is the outer world. It's about results. It's about making things happen. It's about doing. And the two action roles are warrior and king. Warriors act ordinarily, or in the Zoom lens, warriors get the job done themselves. They roll up their sleeves, they make things happen, they're blunt, they're persuasive, they organize things, they're movers and shakers. Kings are the cardinal action role, so they do in a really big picture way. Kings orchestrate others to make things happen. And that's why we don't need that many of them. They're sort of like the queen bee of the hive. You don't need a lot of queen bees and you don't need a lot of king souls. Therefore, they only make up about 4% or 1/28 of the population. The last soul type is the scholar. The scholar is neutral. So the scholar is not about inspiration, expression, or action, but the scholar steps over to the side and observes, provides a library of resources for the other six roles, takes notes, and eventually scholars will be responsible for creating the Akashic Plane. They will upload what they've distilled of their life experiences so that the whole universe has the benefit of their understanding. Scholars may be the hardest spot of the seven rules because of their neutrality. They will have their secondary traits stand out more. So, for example, if you're a scholar with a discarnate King Soul Essence Twin and King Casting, this is your position within larger groupings, you may look like a king rather than a scholar. It can be a little harder to spot the scholars because the secondary traits on the chart can hide their true scholar essence.
So you talk about an essence twin, and then you in your chart you've got a task companion. How do they work together?
When you are planning your grand cycle as a spark of the Tao, you set up a lot of resources that are going to help you along the way. Your essence twin is your twin soul or twin flame. It is not the other half of you, literally, as some people teach. It is another soul that has its own free will, but you have this profound bond with each other. When you know each other on the physical plane, you may work together to have some very deep, intense lessons with each other. So this would be someone who would help you with your growth. If your essence twin is discarnate, meaning not in a body when you are, then it's almost as if the soul is living within you, bleeding through, let's say you're a priest, but you have a scholar essence twin, but let's say that your essence twin were discarnate right now, then you would have more scholar traits because the essence twin is almost like living inside you. Now, your task companion is another soul you team up with at the beginning to work with you on your task. So your task companion, if it is a human being that you know right now, will have the complement of your life task. So let's say your life task is to be an architect. Your task companion might be a contractor. And you work together your whole lives, learning your lessons, complementing one another. And these relationships can be very friendly, very companionable, whereas your essence twin relationship can be quite intense and difficult because your essence twin reflects you back to yourself, including mirroring parts of your shadow that you may not want to look at. But these are the two most important of the great number of soul relationships that the Michael Teachings discusses.
We have pretty much run out of time, and I want to give you a chance to tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can get their own Michael chart and learn more about this. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
My website is my name, shepherdhoodwin.com, and that's spelled S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, Hoodwin, H-O-O-D-W-I-N.com. There's a lot more information about my work and the Michael teachings there, and there's an order form that you can use to order your Michael chart or the charts of loved ones. There's a book pages. I have currently 12 books, including a humor book called Enlightenment for Nitwits, and my book on the Michael Teachings, which is called Journey of Your Soul, a channel explores the Michael Teachings. I also have several books that are collections of channeling on various subjects that are just beautiful. One is called Loving from Your Soul, Creating Powerful Relationships. Three others in that same series that collect inspirational and meditative channeling are Being in the World, Opening to Healing, and Growing Through Joy. In the Michael Teachings, one of the themes is that we're all growing, but most of us are growing predominantly through pain, by bumping into walls and then making course corrections. But that as we awaken, we can learn to have our growth be happy and joyful by making more reasoned, considered choices, for one thing. I have a collection of guided meditations channeled from my essence or higher self called Meditations for Self-Discovery, Guided Journeys for Exploring Your Inner Self. And I also have a few other things up there, like a short ebook called Happiness in the Michael Teachings, which is how the teachings can help us learn to be happier in our lives. So that's all on my website, and I'd be happy to hear from any of you.
Shepherd, thank you so much for being with us again. You're always fun to have on and very educational. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, David.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You're a unique spirit having a life experience. You're far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.